Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all.
Welcome to our 315th programme of Think Again. As usual, we're broadcasting from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Think Again is a programme of Borderlands Cooperative, an organisation working for social change and social and environmental sustainability. I'm Jennifer Burrell, your host today, while Jacques is busy helping to organise the Regenerating Communities Conference, which will be at Borderlands in mid-October. But we're privileged to have Marilyn Garson with us on the line for this program. Marilyn Garson is the author of two books being launched at Trades Hall in Melbourne on the evening of Monday, the 20th of October. One of her books, Still Lives, provides a really personal account of her experience working in Gaza for 4 years, from 2011 through 2015, with this time including the 50-day bombardment of 2014. In her other book, Jewish Not Zionist, Marilyn shares her experience of returning to New Zealand, Aotearoa, and her endeavours to build Jewish solidarity with the people of Palestine, endeavours that meet considerable resistance, to say the least. Welcome to the program, Marilyn Garson.
Thank you very much.
It's a real pleasure and honour having you on the program, Marilyn. So firstly, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. And before I start, let me also say thank you to Interventions for these beautiful Australian editions of my book. I grew up in Canada in a Jewish, uncritically Zionist home. I immigrated to Aotearoa, New Zealand, in the mid-1980s, and then I worked for around 18 years with excluded communities in places of war, in particular with former child soldiers and people with disabilities in Cambodia, and then 5 years with women in Afghanistan. And then I received an unsolicited invitation to live and work in Gaza. For 4 years, I had to ask myself, what will I believe? Everything I have ever been told, or this world in front of my eyes? I came home determined to tell stories about the community of Gaza because I wanted other people to recognize their fellow human beings who lived their whole lives behind a wall. For 6 years, I tried to do that as a member of a progressive synagogue, and I learned the stranglehold that Zionism has on our Jewish institutions. In 2020, I co-founded Alternative Jewish Voices to enact and articulate a liberatory Jewish identity. Now there are places for Jews to belong when they walk out of those Zionist Jewish institutions. Around the same time, we joined Global Jews for Palestine, that is the largest sustained collective of Jewish justice organizations. We have member groups in 21 countries on 6 continents. And that's the story of these two books. They traveled into Gaza and then into this growing movement of Jewish solidarity with Palestine.
Mm-hmm. And all of that being more relevant than ever, given current events. So thank you for that very impressive and interesting background that you just recounted. And as we've said, some of your unique journey and valuable learnings are documented across your two books, Still Lives and Jewish Not Zionist. So Marilyn, can you tell a bit about your story and how moments on your own life path have reflected broader debates relating to the state of Israel's Zionist project and also what it means to be Jewish?
Sure. Among my very earliest memories is the War of 1967, when Israel extended its occupation into East Jerusalem, the West Bank, and Gaza. As a child, I understood that war as a modern miracle. That's how absent Palestine was in my generation. That changed for me in 1988. I was a backpacker in Israel, and there I encountered the First Intifada. In Jerusalem and in Hebron, I saw young men, Palestinian men, confronting an army with stones. It is essential to my understanding of Jewishness that my eye is drawn to the stone. Over and over, we are told, be good to the powerless people because you have been powerless. So I belong with that stone. I need to know what made that young man's action worthwhile. I could not reconcile my understanding of Jewishness with the occupation. So I turned away and I remained an alienated Jew for a quarter century. I didn't understand that there was a way to be Jewish without Israel. Living in Afghanistan and then in Gaza, I found that I was feeling spiritually starved among communities for whom religion was so present. It was so available. I think it was formative that I recovered my Jewish identity and I began to study while I was living in other people's lands. My Jewishness has always been outward looking rather than tribal. I arrived in Gaza and I found that it was simply dismantling the world as I understood it. It altered my geography. We Jews, we are raised with a mental map of the Middle East that has Israel in the center, firing defensively out at a hostile world. We hear, Ein brara, there is no choice. But move to Gaza. Stand behind that wall. The bombs, the missiles, they are firing into a civilian community that has no defensive weapon. They hit your friends' houses. Gaza was so dense that we used to say the bombs had names on them. Gaza is a miniature world. And the beating heart of Palestinian resistance to occupation, that is what Israel and Trump have spent 2 years trying to dismantle. And that is the world I want readers to enter. So let me just take a moment to stand within this miniature world. I worked mostly with teams of young IT graduates. Gaza has some of the world's highest rates of educational achievement, and IT was an industry that jumped right over those illegal blockade walls. But imagine them, those graduates. Most of them had never left Gaza. They had never driven an hour in a straight line because Gaza is so small. They had bilingual degrees. They could program computers, but they had never seen a train. We worked together for 4 years through two wars. Gaza had been occupied and then illegally blockaded for four generations. Donors like our governments simply denied the political cause of the injustice in Palestine. They managed Gaza in particular as if it were an endless, static, humanitarian problem, but Gaza has never been a humanitarian problem. There has been no earthquake. Gaza built industries, factories, half a dozen universities. As a society, Gaza had exceptional mutual support and trust. All these social assets preserved a real society through all the stresses and the violence of occupation and overcrowding and intermittent bombardment. People helped each other as naturally as they breathed.
Marilyn, I think the humanity of the people in Gaza comes through so strongly in Still Lives. And it occurs to me, I guess it's fairly obvious and you raise it yourself, that this project, this occupation and war from coming from Israel, it's made possible by dehumanizing the people of Gaza, that they're not real people. And I think there was even a quote in Silent Lives by an Israeli politician who was soon to be Minister of Justice, and they urged soldiers to kill the elderly and women who give birth to little snakes. I can't think of a more vibrant dehumanisation in language.
Yeah, people had almost stopped hearing it around me, but we were constantly exposed to this threat. I remember a minister of defense. I don't know, he woke up on the wrong side of the bed and he said, it's time for Gaza to feel the pain of Israeli fists. It was a constant undertone. And now everyone has heard the phrase, it's time to mow the lawn, it's time to finish the job. Mm. But the things that Gaza was missing are the list of our human rights. Yes, they had all these social assets, but the things they were missing were their human rights: sufficient food, clean water, light, mobility, freedom, self-determination. Those are the things that Israel withheld. And I was watching people make a society without that, because in those days, Gaza had simply fallen off the agenda. And all of that changed in my third year in 2014, when Israel bombed Gaza for 50 days and nights. And I was working for UNRWA then, that is the United Nations agency that Israel has been illegally trying to dismantle. I stayed in Gaza through that war, and I worked as a part of the UN emergency response team. We converted UN schools to shelters, as everyone will have seen in the course of this war. We were prepared for 35,000 people to be displaced, but 293,000 people walked through the school gates. So imagine, that's between 3,000 and 4,000 people crammed into each school using those tiny little children's sinks with no adult furniture. Imagine the society that does not tear itself apart under fire in those conditions for 50 days. So the experience of that war, of course, without comparing that bombardment with the present genocide, it showed me that bombardment behind a wall is like a medieval nightmare. It is nothing like our understanding of the word war. One of the world's most heavily and technologically armed forces just rains fire down on a civilian city.
On bodies, I think that comes through so strongly in Still Lives. It's so visceral and physical that the phrase came to me reading it. You had skin in the game. Everyone did. You had skin in it. And I thought, literally, you have skin in the game, because really, what's your body as a defence against bombs falling? And you could have died. And the people around you, you're wondering who was living every morning, who died and who's alive.
And the vision that comes back to me over and over is the fact that after every single bomb, neighbors run into that danger to save neighbors.
Whoa.
Really, the bravery, the camaraderie, it's almost impossible to imagine running into that danger hour after hour and day after day.
Really highlighting the humanity of the people who Israel has done so much to try to dehumanize, to justify such atrocities, bombing on civilians and children. Yeah. And hospitals and schools.
Yeah. And I think 2014, that sight, that awareness was a wake up for many, many people. They saw what Palestinians already knew. They saw that the idea of Gazan people continuing to live in that ghetto was simply unthinkable. And more people stood up with Palestinians to call not only for ceasefire, but for justice, for lives of dignity. I think it was a before and after moment for a lot of people. It was also a critical moment for Israel, because Israel saw that it could bomb more extensively than it ever had before, that countries did not require Israel to stop. And just as I came home, Israel began to lurch further to the right, and this virulent settler Zionism began to gain electoral power in Israel. I came home to Aotearoa thinking that I would join my Jewish community and take up the study of Judaism while telling Gaza's stories. I believed, and we are seeing this now, that if people understood the life being lived behind that illegal wall, they would find it intolerable. So with my team members, of course, I wrote a book about our years together. I felt like that was an appropriate way to speak without presuming to speak for Palestinians. You know, I can make introductions. I could bring people into a place that they had not seen before. But it did not go as planned. In those same years, the Jewish institutions of Aotearoa were captured at board level, and they became top-down, ardent, punitive Zionist institutions. I tried to withstand that for 6 years as a member of a progressive synagogue, until eventually I was diagnosed with what they used to call shell shock. And I have written that story because that kind of institutional abuse has to end. When I sat down to write that book, Jewish Not Zionist, it is the first book in Aotearoa to examine issues of Jewish identity and Zionism and Jewish solidarity with Palestine. I thought it was time to see what I call a rest of world story. What happens far from New York and London and Sydney? What happens when you are under fire from such a community? How do we each construct some kind of Jewish identity that is, for me, spiritual, anti-Zionist, activist? And the answer is that we need to build a better community. We and others have begun to do that in Aotearoa. In 2020, I co-founded Alternative Jewish Voices, which is an anti-Zionist Jewish collective. I know you have several in Australia. We found that we were building our advocacy and activist programs through some really pivotal years worldwide. Jews around the world have begun to assert this new liberatory identity. We are politically alive, we are principled, we are outward facing and solidarist. A lot of us have come together under the umbrella of Global Jews for Palestine. That's a collective of Jewish groups in 21 countries. And then suddenly everything accelerated with Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza. You know, it's just gone 2 years. Who would believe that Israel would be permitted and armed to carry out genocide for 2 years?
Exactly.
We see that Jewish identity and this disingenuous definition of anti-Semitism, they've been weaponized from here to the UK, to the US. And notwithstanding that, Jewish solidarity has blossomed all over the world. When I hear our institutions and yours still rationalizing Israel's indefensible actions, boy, I am just reminded that we need new institutions.
Yeah, I think I've read you referring to the casual language used to justify what Israel's doing, and I'm even hearing it on the news recently. I heard something like the ABC will talk about the current conflict, which began with Hamas's invasion into southern Israel, as if it started 2 years ago.
That's absolutely essential, because it changes the story. If you say history begins today, it changes the story. If you disregard 75 previous years, and if you disregard 730 days since October 7th, you have a very different story.
I actually heard someone from, I think, the Israeli army or leadership on the radio saying that no other country would be asked to feed its enemies. And that was put forward as a justification for starving, keeping food out of Gaza, saying we shouldn't have to feed our enemies, in which, in one breath, he's saying all of the people in Gaza are our enemies, I guess, and we shouldn't have to feed them, denying their own agency in starving the people, I guess.
Right. So, of course, in most wars, there is not a blockade in place. And we have just spent a century trying to limit the harms of war by distinguishing civilian from combatant. And this person's statement simply disregards that distinction.
Yes, and what
have a right to food,
yes.
Period. And that precedes military strategy.
And what I also notice is the interviewers tiptoeing around a bit. Like interviewers who are normally quite feisty in challenging the person they're interviewing, suddenly giving them the floor just to say these things without challenge. So, Marilyn,
there's a clear reason. Those interviewers will be concerned about their jobs. There is a new and very political definition of anti-Semitism that lets people be called anti-Semitic simply for being challenging or failing to be exceptional. When criticizing Israel in the terms in which we can criticize any other belligerent party is called anti-Semitic, then an interviewer has nowhere to go. So it takes courage now, and there aren't enough courageous journalists, or perhaps there aren't enough courageous managers working with journalists.
Well, the ones that are courageous, some of them in different positions, not just the media, some of them are finding their careers going off the rails because of challenging that dominant Israel narrative about that what they're doing is self-defense after all this time. So I'm just conscious that we're coming towards the end. It's gone very quickly. Thank you, Marilyn. So I'll just remind listeners, you're listening to Think Again, 3CR 855 AM on your dial, 3CR digital and streaming at 3cr.org.au. I'm Jennifer Burrell, and today I'm talking with author Marilyn Garson, whose books, Still Lives and Jewish Not Zionist, are being launched at Trades Hall in Melbourne on Monday, 20th of October at 6:30 p.m. Marilyn has been telling us about her own journey, including 4 years living and working with Palestinian people in Gaza, and how her personal experience relates to, I guess, broader debates about Israel's Zionist project. And I guess you've touched a little on what it means to be Jewish, which listeners can read a lot more about in her books, which I think is very interesting. So, Marilyn, what do you think needs to happen to bring peace for Palestine and Israel? That's a big question.
Yeah, I can't speak to the details of the plan they're discussing because Trump will change his mind tomorrow. But at a high level, with this plan, Palestinians have been faced with an impossible scenario. They need to submit to a neo-colonization or continue to see Israel starve their families. I can't imagine that dilemma. And as ever, the plan they are discussing puts the cart before the horse. It imposes all kinds of control up front, requiring Palestinians to jump through years of hoop before the colonizers and the real estate developers even acknowledge that Palestine is a nation with an inalienable, court-affirmed right to be self-determining on that land. Mm-hmm. So the plan is absurd. And there, as everywhere, we know that there is no peace in occupation and oppression. There is no peace on stolen land. However, the history of attacks on Gaza suggests that only the first couple of steps of any agreement will ever be seriously discussed. What will happen? We're in this strange suspension in country after country, we see these broad, resolute movements in the streets, rejecting the world that Israel is showing us and shouting for Palestinian rights and accountability for Israel's crimes. Our governments talk, but they refuse to do what the courts have instructed them to do to bring this illegal occupation to an end. So we're sort of suspended between enormous popular demand for real justice and the inaction of our government.
Mm-hmm.
What will happen is that we need to prevail. God, Palestine is a fulcrum now on which so much is poised. So we need to pull harder.
So I guess that answers my final question a little bit. What can listeners do? And I know listeners have been very active, been protesting every week and taking lots of actions with, I think, Free Palestine and APAN. And I can put links to those actions and campaigns on our website. But definitely we need to keep up the pressure. Is there anything you wanted to add about that before we finish off, Marilyn?
I would add one other point. This is a really strong suit in Aotearoa and perhaps here as well. Maori have recognized and embraced the story and the rights of Palestine. Where they lead, we benefit from their long vision, from their tikanga, the expectations they set. And we benefit hugely from Titiriti, our founding treaty document. Titiriti is an invitation to coexist in a reciprocal dignity, and that gives our protest an aspirational vision. So I think it's really important for people to make those connections, to anchor their understanding of Palestine within the issues they care about at home. That will move all of the issues forward, and that kind of grounded solidarity can also be sustained because we are seeing that peace and justice are very long works.
Yes, and certainly those links have been and are being made with First Nations people here in Australia with the campaign for justice for Palestine. So thanks so much, Marilyn, for joining us on the program today. I think it's been, for me, very inspirational, but your life is very inspirational too, and I'm so impressed with your heartfelt, committed humanity that really pushes through in both of your books and also in this interview, and not least because you experience the humanity of the Gazan people day to day and in person, and shared, you know, mortal danger with them really while you were living there in 2014.
Thank you for having me, and I look forward to meeting you and some of your listeners in Melbourne.
So do I. So for our listeners who want to meet you, I'll put the link to all the launches for when you're in Australia. I'll put that on the program page. But for people in Melbourne, there's a launch at Trades Hall, Monday the 20th of October at 6:30 p.m. Thanks to our listeners for tuning in to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio today. If you want to contact us or comment on our program, please email Borderlands. The address is borders@borderlands.org.au. Our programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and on the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. Now, to end our program for today, please enjoy Milku Mana by King Stingray.
Milku Mana!
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.